So some of you know that I took a trip in September on a boat into the Sea of Cortez. And it was a period of time, that particular week was actually the week of the new moon. So at night, when some of us would go up on the deck of the boat, and we were in the middle of literally nowhere, we went into this sea that is surrounded by, on the left or the west, was the Baja Peninsula, and the right was the mainland of Mexico. And when you got down into this part of the ocean, there was nothing around you. If you saw land, it was uninhabited. So there were no lights. There was no human activity. It was absolutely quiet except for the sound of the ocean. And we would be in the middle of this vastness at night with absolutely clear skies and no moon. So you can imagine what the stars looked like. They were just spectacular. The Milky Way was like milk. Now, when I was out there, I would play around with this little thing. I would try to find the North Star. So there are various techniques to do that. You can look for the Big Dipper, which was not hard to find. And there are two pointer stars at the end of the Dipper, and they point right at the North Star. And sometimes the Dipper would be just down at the horizon or a little bit below. There was another way to do it. If you look at Cassiopeia, there were two pointer stars there that I figured out that pointed at another two pointer stars that then pointed at the North Star. Now, what I was doing is actually an ancient technique. Mariners, for as long as navigation has been known, have used the North Star to navigate, to be in the middle of this vastness at night and have a way of knowing what direction to go in, to get from point A to point B, and to avoid disaster. And the worst disaster would be being lost at sea. This is before GPS, before radios, and it was critical that you were able to know in the vastness of this ocean exactly what direction to move in. Now, the North Star is able to provide this information to the mariner for one reason. It doesn't move. It is the one star out of billions and billions that you can see at night that doesn't move. Now, if you were to take a time-lapse photograph, you would see everything, all the stars wheeling around this one central point. They would make, if it was a very long period of time that the camera's lens stayed open, you were in a tripod, you'd see beautiful, perfect circles out of every star surrounding this one point that doesn't move, the North Star. So this is why the North Star is of such enormous value, because it's unmoving. And it's been that way throughout human history. It's utterly reliable. Now, there's a saying that my teacher would from time to time say about Zen practice and about the mistake, the profound mistake that we human beings make in trying to find this center point, this place that you can totally rely on. And in this metaphor, it goes like this, it's very simple. It's like looking south to try to find the North Star. Like looking south to try to find the North Star. So you can imagine if a mariner looked south trying to find this star, he would be lost. Now, in this metaphor, let's just say the North Star is this thing that is original, totally reliable, unmoving, unchanging, the deepest aspect of the being that is already present, that needs not be created, that is always there, that can be completely relied upon to point you in a direction of what, for a better word, I would call freedom. And what is this looking south? What does that mean in this metaphor? What is looking south? Now, we're in election season right now. Perhaps there aren't that many people here tonight because people are voting, people are curious about how the elections are going, whatever. But during this election season, you get assailed with all sorts of ads, political ads, and news stories and news articles about how terrible the world is, how many horrible things are happening, and why couldn't these things have been stopped? And why do we have to be afraid of Ebola? And why is ISIS doing all the things it's doing, and perhaps in some people's minds threatening our very existence? And why did the stock market go down? And why is oil so inexpensive? And how's that going to affect me? And how would I, with a minimum wage, be able to put food on the table? On and on and on and on. All with a sense of foreboding, anxiety. It shouldn't be like this. There's some better place. It was like that sometime in the past, and it could be like that again. This is precisely looking south. Things have always been this way. Nothing has ever been perfect. Things have always been difficult. There have always been threats. And if everything is absolutely perfect and all your ducks are lined up in a row, as the famous Nobel Prize winning economist Keynes once said, in the long run we're all dead. It is inescapable. And no matter what promises a politician or anyone else might make, that they're going to get all the ducks lined up in a row, you already know that they're lying. The minute their lips are moving, you know they're lying. You know that. Everyone knows that. This is why the Buddha, in the First Noble Truth, said life is dukkha. In other words, the observable world, the world of form, the world that comes to us in particularities, the world that has all the opposites, all the variegations, etc., etc., is never going to be the perfect solution to this place of freedom. Now, this world of form, these ever-changing circumstances, these human endeavors and follies, this hatred in the world, this destruction, this evil, diseases and difficulties, all that stuff. That is not what in this metaphor is referred to as looking south. That's not looking south. Looking north is not getting rid of that, because you can't. It's the way things are. If things could have been one iota different in this moment, they would have been that way, but they couldn't be, so they ended up exactly this way. And this fact, this knowledge, this understanding, which is utterly simple and utterly obvious, is one of the key aspects of Zen practice, to really get that down to the marrow of your bones, that if it could have been one iota different, it would have been. So to know that, and to have this world be as it is, with all its uncertainties and difficulties and suffering and stress and strain and worry and all those things, to have it exactly like that is not what in this metaphor is looking south. What is looking south and what is looking north? These directions, I believe, are the critical thing that any teacher of a path like this could point out. It is the critical thing is to point out what these directions mean, and then perhaps how to proceed in the direction of moving north, moving to this place that is unmoving, unborn, your birthright, present forever, not newly created, that leads to a sense of freedom from the opposition to, the clinging to, the distress over, the comparison-mindedness about the world of ever-changing form that is the way it is because of causes and conditions. So looking south is all the ways that we name it, that we compare it, that we hold on to what we want out of it, pick out what we want, push away what we don't want, all these things. We've gone over this many, many, many times. All of these things, this looking south, is the human condition, is the great majority of human behavior, including everyone in this room. When we leave this room, we have to know where to go, know why we're going there, have a particular aim for that, have a goal, and if the goal isn't achieved, there's a certain sense of distress or disappointment, and if the goal is achieved, there's a certain transient happiness, and all these things. That's the human condition. We have to live in that world to survive. That's part of this karmic fabric. But this practice is unique and extremely precious, in that just like someone out in the ocean being tossed around in the wind and the waves is able to point us towards this North Star. This is a critical step in our practice, is learning how to and understanding what is looking north. What is looking north? Now, I've described that in many different ways over the months and even years now. And these descriptions are like, you know, and I described this to some of the new people that are here tonight, like a rudder. It's like our boat is our zazen, is our body in zazen, and the attitude of mind and the tautness of the back. The rudder is this direction that we need to learn to point in. That's the rudder. It doesn't propel the boat, but it points it in the direction. We propel the boat with two oars. One of the oars, as I've described before, is one of these critical pillars of our practice called mindfulness. And the other is inquiry. These two working together propel us in the direction of this rudder set north. So what is this north? What is this north? Let me read something, just an example of another Zen teacher and the way that they tried to point that out to their student. This is during a sesshin, actually, and this is a rare transcription of a Dokusan. And as you know, Dokusan is totally private. But the author of this book, Philip Kaplow, who is a Zen teacher, is no longer alive. Wrote this book, Three Pillars of Zen. And in it, he had permission from his teachers. One was Harada Roshi, the other Yazutani Roshi. I think this was Harada Roshi, actually. Because he was bilingual, he spoke both Japanese and English, to not only translate for Westerners that came to Dokusan, but to, after the Dokusan was over, take his notes. He used to be a court reporter. So he was able to take very detailed notes about exactly what transpired between the teacher and the student. So this is a student who's working very hard, trying to get on this direction, can't quite find it. The teacher is now trying to get him pointed. So I'm going to read this to you. He's actually working on the Koan Mu. And the student asked this question. This is after some give and take with the teacher that went on for a while. Teacher's describing that when you die, the universe dies with you, is what the teacher said. you and the universe are not separate and apart. Right? He's talking about the North Star right now. Enlightenment is no more than the realization that the world of discrimination, okay, this world of all the forms, all the difficulties, all the struggle, all the changes, sound, sights, smells, feelings, thoughts, all this stuff, emotions, that the world of discrimination and the world of undifferentiation are not two. When you directly and positively experience this, you are enlightened. So this is where this starts. The student then says to the master, what then is mu? Is it the realization of the undifferentiated? And the Roshi answered this way, to realize the undifferentiated is a necessary first step, but the realization is incomplete if it goes no further. After you have seen into your true nature, that is, become enlightened, you see all objects as temporary phenomena undergoing endless change, but you see them in and through the aspect of sameness. Okay, this North Star, this undifferentiated, this sameness. You then understand that without the undifferentiated, there can be no individual existences. Now we're beginning to have a little better idea of this North Star of our practice, this undifferentiated. It's what is the foundation. It is what is the background. It is what is the screen against which all these changes appear, without which they could not even be. This is called in has many names, and it's called true nature, emptiness, original face, one mind, many, many names for this space, this star, this undifferentiated substance. Sometimes it's described as the substance, and all these forms, these things that we contend with when we're pointing south, struggling with, noticing, suffering with, dealing with this human condition, is what's called the differentiated. It's called function. The substance, when it is under the effect of causes and conditions, all the causes and effects, all the karmic interconnections throughout the fabric of space-time, when this substance is subjected to that, it manifests in differentiation in particular ways. So he is trying to now get this student to be able to turn from the contending, the struggling with, the trying to reach out and grasp something as his object, to turn a completely new direction, completely new. The student can't quite get on this wavelength. And he puts it this way. He says, I can illustrate what I am saying with this paper fan. One side has many stripes, as you see. The other is pure white. The white side can be called the undifferentiated. The side with stripes, the discriminated. What makes the stripes appear as stripes is the white or undifferentiated side of the fan. Conversely, what makes the white side meaningful is the stripes. They are two aspects of the one, with a capital O. But while the discriminated aspect is subject to ceaseless transformation, that which is undifferentiated is changeless. So he's now working very uniquely with this individual. He understands this person. He is working in a unique and free way to turn this boat in the direction of this North Star. So he says to the student, since you are a philosophically minded person, hereafter, don't try to become one with Mu, which is the way that we work with this call on Mu. He said, simply dwell upon what I've just said until you suddenly perceive your self-nature. Is that clear? That will be your practice from now on. So he's pointing at this undifferentiated. Now, when we try to reach it with any conception, no matter how slight, any idea, any picture of it, anything that it might be, and we're pointing out, trying to grasp something outside, something we need to achieve, something we need to attain, something that isn't there that we need to get, that would be the ordinary way that people practice looking south and never being able to see the North Star. So the key thing in our practice is to learn how to do this. Now, it's not difficult. It's actually exceedingly simple. But it is so different than what we ordinarily do with our body-mind that it's difficult for us to get on the wavelength. So what I've gone over many, many times, and I continue to repeat this because it's so critical, is that there are steps to getting there. The first step is what I taught two people here tonight, and which we all know, and which every time we sit we practice, which is learning to have a one-pointed focus, a one-pointed concentration, to have that stability of body-mind, and the development of this Jodi Ki that gives you the stability so that you're not instantly turned into the direction of south, which is how we usually walk into the Zendo. So you're not stuck there. The pointer on your compass is not being attracted in that direction. So we first concentrate. We have a focal point. So this focal point, whatever it may be, is something neutral, something that we don't make discriminations about if we're correctly practicing. It could be simply the count, it could be the breath, it could be shikantaza. Things arise, thoughts come up, these things are sticky, they start to pull our compass south, we start to think about what we're going to do next, what's going to happen in the election, what did that person say to me 3 days ago, how am I going to pay that phone bill, whatever it might be, comes up. The very next step we must do, this is the critical thing, if we want to be able to turn north, is we have to be able to see all of these things as done at the moment they enter our awareness. They are done. The moment we become aware of anything in our zazen, all the causes and conditions that led to it have been completed. They are complete. The Buddha talked about Kasana, K-S-A-N-A. It's a thought moment. In other words, what our experience is not a smooth, constant transition. Things are not infinitely, gradually becoming something else. What we experience in our life are instantaneous thought moments. They're like quanta. In physics, there's a couple of theoretical descriptions. One is called Planck length, and another is called Planck time. In other words, the shortest possible length is a Planck length. It's the length that a photon will travel in one Planck time. A Planck length, you could consider it exceedingly short. If you took the dot on a page and you expanded it to the size of the universe, and then you took a dot in that universe and you shrunk everything back down, that dot would be a Planck length. That's the shortest length, theoretically, that can be measured. Nothing can be shorter than that because it can't be measured. Nothing can be shorter than a Planck time because it can't be measured. It's not possible. So in a sense, it would be theoretical, but it doesn't actually exist. So when we experience this world, we are experiencing this moment, this moment, this moment. The moment anything in our zazen presents to our awareness, that moment is the quanta that is done. So we have this attitude towards it now. In this zazen, in this space, it is done. I no longer need to contend, to name it, to deal with it, to compare it. And if I do those things, all those are done. I continually draw a circle around this so that I can now point north. I'm no longer pulled south. Is I understand that whatever is appearing is absolute. It is absolute. If it could have been one iota different, it would have been another way, and that would be the absolute. Now I need to turn north. So what I suggest to do this, it's very, very simple. We hold in our mind the object of our practice. And this is how I define mindfulness. We hold it in our mind as we maintain our awareness of its presence, its fact. This is already pointing north. When you become aware of something's fact and no longer contend with its details, its form, contend with meaning compare, meaning attach to, meaning reject, all the things that point north, you are now pointing north. You are pointing in the right direction. Pointing south. You are pointing in the direction now of this undifferentiated. This is what will bring you there. So this is a critical step in our practice, is to be able to, in this step of dispassion, of understanding that things are stopped in this moment. There's a term in Zen to stop the river, stop the boat on the ocean, stop the sound of the bell, stop the sound of the waterfall. At the moment we are aware of something, it is done. It is complete. It is absolute. We don't need to do anything more about it, make any idea about it, have any reaction to it. If the reaction is there, it's part of it. It's part of that done fabric. Now we notice that it is present. It is there. This is the deeper, mind-blowing, absolutely mysterious, unexplainable reality that it is. No one can say why that is. No one can describe it. No one can say anything about it. It has no color. It has no sound. It has no smell. It is utterly mysterious but utterly present. We now point in that direction. So one of these oars that I call mindfulness, my way of defining mindfulness, is to hold in the mind this focal point. It is always in the form of something. Shikantaza, breath, whatever it might be. Those things don't disappear at this point. But its presence has no particularity, no form. I hold it in my mind and I'm aware of its presence. The next step is to look deeply into that, profoundly into that. What is it? What is it? As I look into that, then I begin to enter this darkness. I'm going to describe this step too. This is from a Zen master named Uman. It's one of the koans from the Hekigan Roku. So this koan, I've read this before, we've discussed this, and I'm just going to read it very briefly. It's a short one. Uman's everyone has his own light. So Uman, this famous Zen master from the Tang Dynasty, said to the assembly, everyone has its own light, though when you try to see it, you cannot. Everything is darkness. Everyone has his own light, though when you try to see it, you cannot. Everything is darkness. What is everybody's light? Okay. He is pointing his students now in this direction. When you try to see it, you can't describe it. You can't say it has any particularities. You try to see something objective, but you can't because you're not looking in that direction. You are actually looking in an entirely new direction. Now we think in terms of three dimensions in the world we live in, the north is this way, south is this way. This is a completely different direction. This north, the north of our practice, is an inward direction, not an outward direction. We are actually looking in at the very looking. We are turning the light of the mind in on itself. This is a critical, critical step. If you cannot move in this direction, you cannot progress. Your zazen will not be useless. It will help you greatly, give you health and stability of mind. It'll help you have insights into your life. But if you want to find this North Star, you will never find it pointing in that direction. You have to learn to turn the light of the mind in on itself. So this critical piece, this dispassion, so that we detach ourselves from the activities of mind that continually point us outward, and the awareness of the presence now is becoming very intimate. This intimate direction is the direction that we move in this step in our zazen. Later on, when we really have done this thoroughly, just as Harada Roshi said to the student, if you stop there, you are incomplete. You cannot stop there, but you must start there if you want to move in this direction. Then you must move outward again, but with the knowledge of what this substance is, what this North Star is. Then you suddenly, one day, just like when the Buddha, at his enlightenment, saw the morning star and suddenly came to enlightenment, you'll see that this substance is everywhere. It's spread throughout the universe. It's not inside or outside. And its name would be, you could call it one, inseparable, undividable, singular, intimate. So this is the direction, this is that looking north to find the North Star. So I think we'll end there tonight.